call this meeting to order. Members, today we are going to review Senate File 139. And Senator Lurie is here, so welcome to the committee, Senator. We are excited about your presentation. We know that you have worked very hard to come to this moment and to propose, and I also know that you have other steps that you have to take and a couple of other committees that you will be presenting to, including your own committee, so people will have a chance to look into this and get back to you. Our jurisdiction is purely on the structure that you are proposing and not the actual, policy issues that relate to the obligations of this new structure, but the structure itself. So that's the jurisdiction and the language that we will be reviewing today. So welcome to the committee, Senator. And Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a question. Is this not the first committee this has been heard in?
This is the first committee, Senator.
Okay, so as the committee of original jurisdiction, then we're open to discuss anything, right?
Senator, part of the issue, I think, is that the Health and Human Services policy process is quite cumbersome, and I personally feel a little limited in terms of understanding the full conversation that has taken place that Senator Lurie has been entertaining during the interim. To be quite honest with you, I have not participated in those conversations other than just on the periphery. So I feel that I don't know what is the case. I think that we do have Senator Hayden, who serves in that committee, Senator Eaton, who serves in the committee, Senator Wicklund, who also serves in the committee. So we have some members who can help, but I am not so sure that our jurisdiction is encompasses, the entire bill. So we are kind of looking into the structural piece. Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I guess I'd have to look at the Senate rules, but my understanding is the expertise of the chair or the members is irrelevant. In a committee of original jurisdiction, which is the first committee in which a bill is heard, members are free to talk about anything. Am I wrong on that?
No, Senator, I think you're absolutely right.
Thank you.
We do that in the floor as well. You know, obviously you have the right to ask any question you want. Senator, all I'm saying, I'm clarifying that perhaps we have not had ample time to look into the policy aspects of Health and Human Services in this committee. If members believe that we should make the space to look into that, because that's an issue you want to dive into, I guess we could contemplate that, but I think that the issues that are our responsibility are more related to the structure in terms of the jurisdiction of the committee. So that's just a clarification, but obviously you are free to ask questions, and I think the chair of the committee will respond. So, Senator, again, welcome, and please proceed to your presentation.
Madam Chair and members, thank you. I am here with Senate File 139. Maybe I'll just start with, I think it's good news that this is not Senate File 1 this time around. I think that is a relief to everyone, myself included. And we have a little bit more time. Last time we were very, very pressed for time as we went through this. The reason this is the Committee of Original Jurisdiction, and actually maybe I will have I would like to move an author's amendment, the A1 amendment, if I could, which is a pretty simple amendment, but it is the first one. It doesn't change things a great deal, but if the committee would entertain an author's amendment, the A1.
We need the A1 amendment.
I would ask somebody to move it.
That, please. I need someone to move the amendment on. Senator Wicklund moves the A1 amendment to put the bill in the shape that the author wishes. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
The amendment.
Only
I'm
so
sorry.
It yet.
I am so sorry, Senator. I'll wait.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Senator Pappas. I'll repeat the motion. All of those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you again, Madam Chair and members. So the reason this is the Committee of Original Jurisdiction is because this is really a change to the governance structure of Minsure, and that's what it is intended to do. With the committee's indulgence, I'll go back a couple of years, 11 and 12, while the legislature was not doing a lot of work on a health insurance exchange, but we did have a very active large stakeholder engagement process through the Health Insurance Exchange Task Force. I served on that. I actually found governance one of the key issues that we needed to address and have an approach that we felt would best suit a Minnesota-based exchange. As you can guess, it's a tough call what governance structure to choose. And there are advantages and disadvantages to every governance structure that you choose to implement to undertake reform as important as the health insurance exchange is for Minnesota families. So we chose a hybrid quasi-public-private partnership model. And it's important to go back a little bit and say, and I worked for this hard. And so we'll go back and say what the advantages and the disadvantages were of this model as opposed to some of the other models that were under consideration. Some of the advantages of this hybrid quasi-public-private partnership were to have a more nimble entity able to respond and react to market pressures in a still largely private marketplace operating for private health insurance across the state of Minnesota. And one of the additional advantages in that same vein was the ability to do a better job with an IT rollout so that we could be unencumbered by some of the trappings that tend to, you know, slow down state government at times. And so by freeing it, that was the one set of the advantages. And I need to say, I think that we didn't get those advantages to the extent we were anticipating. I don't think that the current structure has operated in a mode to be as responsive and nimble as we were anticipating, and I don't think that anyone could make the argument that the IT build-out went better under this structure than under an agency structure. There are additional advantages in terms of some isolation from the political process, but I actually don't think it actually insulated us very well from politics either. This has been a very difficult political issue for the 18 or so months that this has been operating. The disadvantages to a quasi-public-private partnership were that, you know, we have a very well-honed, long-standing tradition for how we function as a public and make decisions in a public body about policy and about how budgets run and how taxing authority will be exercised with clear lines of authority and accountability and openness that run through the legislature for budgetary issues and oversight and then directly to the administration for a overall direction for an agency. And we insulated it from those issues. And we needed to build an oversight structure that is not familiar to citizens, to industry, to stakeholders across the board, and tried to create that openness, that open, accountable, transparent governance through other means. And, you know, I think that became much more problematic, much more of a disadvantage than we had anticipated. We tried to build an accountability structure that would work. And quite frankly, it didn't work as well as we expected. So given that it was a judgment call at the outset, whether we go with a known agency model with clear lines of authority and accountability and budget setting priorities, or this hybrid with the advantages not being realized to the extent expected and the disadvantages being more problematic than expected, I've done the hard soul searching to go back and say, you know, I think we got that wrong, and that we would be better served by a straight-up agency model with clear lines of authority to put in context the entirety of all of the individuals served through MnSure. So with that little bit of background, I will step through the bill and what it does. And again, it can be summarized rather briefly, but I will step through for the members' benefits section by section. But really, it takes what is MnSure today, dissolves the board, and moves it into a departmental structure, much more familiar to members and the public with how we run every other core function, most every other core function,
Madam Chair,
within the state.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would it be best for us to wait until he's done to answer or ask him some questions?
Thank you, Senator Hall. I appreciate that. We do. I would like to wait until the senator goes through his presentation, and then we will have four people who will be testifying. So we're going to try to do our best to put your questions for the testifiers, but maybe after he finishes the presentation, you can do questions.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. It shouldn't take that long to step through the bill. Again, it is not terribly complicated this time around. Section 1 designates the Department of MnSure as a department within state government. Section 2 adds the Commissioner of MnSure to the list of positions which the salary for the position cannot exceed 133% of the governor's salary. Section 3 removes the definition of the board and changes it to the commissioner, to refer to the Commissioner of MnSure, and makes this change in the definition for qualified health plans as well. Section 5 specifies that MnSure is a department of the state government and specifies that they will be subject to the audits of the legislative auditor, much like every other state agency. Section also removes references to specific laws that were applicable to the board. That's conflict of interest, statement of economic interest, gifts by lobbyists, and the like. It should be noted that these sections would continue to apply, but would just do so by virtue of it being a department rather than an independent board. Also strikes reference to the open meeting law in Chapter 13, again, because it applies simply by nature of it being a department. Also removes the current exemptions to certain sections of Chapter 16E, which is the Office of Minute, the Minnesota IT Department. Section 6 eliminates the Board of Directors and requires the Commissioner to continue to maintain advisory committees to provide stakeholders the opportunity to advise the Commissioner regarding the operation of MnSure, and changes a number of references from Board to Commissioner. The A1 amendment actually has some additional requirements, and that's the extent of the A1 amendment, and it makes clear that those advisory committees are subject to the open meeting law, and that we added the requirement that they be held at least quarterly to make sure that we continue to get that valued input from important stakeholders in the process. Section 7 contains the responsibilities and powers of MnSure and makes the following changes in each subdivision. Subdivision 1 changes the reference from board to commissioner and strikes reference to a separate compensation plan for MnSure's director and managerial staff. Subdivision 3 strikes obsolete language. Section 4 strikes obsolete language and changes references and adds language to ensure that compensation paid by MnSure to navigators and in-person assisters is equal to the compensation paid to insurance producers. This one needs some work. We're going to try to work on that probably in an upcoming committee. The concept here is that there's a real disparity between how assisters out in the community are helping people find the product that's right for them. For navigators, assisting somebody access Medicaid, they get paid $25. If they're accessing MinnesotaCare, they get paid $70. If they're accessing a qualified health plan on the individual market, they get paid the same dollars. Brokers get paid through direct contracts with insurance carriers for products, QHP products sold, but they don't get paid at all for MinnesotaCare or Medicaid. And I'd like there to be parity between Medicaid and MinnesotaCare for brokers and navigators and in-person assisters. and leave the compensation structure for QHPs in place for the brokers with their agreements with the plans. But it needs a little bit of work to clean that up, but that's the jurisdiction of another committee. I just want to try to express what our intent is there, which may not be clear reading the language. Subdivision 5 strikes obsolete language and changes references. Subdivision 6 changes references. Subdivision 7 changes references and also strikes the requirement that MNSURE establish and maintain an agreement with the Office of Minute, adds a requirement that the Commissioner consult with Minute and the Commissioner of Human Services on all decisions that relate to IT services that permit MNSURE the ability to administer eligibility for public health care programs and QHPs. This is, again, to make sure that the that MNSURE has the appropriate focus on everyone served through MNSURE. Subdivision 8 changes references and strikes the very expedited rulemaking that was needed when we passed this bill 2 years ago to get it up and running at first, but those had already expired. Subdivision 10, but then now we can just strike them from the law. Subdivision 10 changes references and strikes the language that states that MNSURE can provide insurance to its employees. They would be provided insurance as state employees under this, were this to become law. So then moving on to Section 8, again, references in obsolete language. Section 9 specifies that the MNSURE account shall be created in a state government special revenue fund instead of the special revenue fund, and strikes language appropriating funds in the MNSURE account to MNSURE for its operations. The result of these changes is really that the budget for MNSURE would follow the same procedure followed by other state agencies and would require funds for the operation of MNSURE be appropriated through the legislative process. Section 10 is references, Section 11 is references, and strikes a reference to a repealed chapter, and Section 12 repeals the Legislative Oversight Committee. That is the extent of the bill, and with that, I'd stand for questions or entertain testimony from members, whatever at the chair's and members' discretion.
Thank you, Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it my understanding that there is a legislative audit report coming out on this by the end of February or first part of March?
Senator?
Madam Chair, Senator Hall, yes, the Office of the Legislative Auditor is working on reports. I do believe they will be ready for probably sometime earlier in the second half of February, and I very much anticipate that. I've been asked several times, why don't we wait for that to come out? It will cover some governance issues. And, you know, my standard response is, I respect the work of the Office of the Legislative Auditor a great deal. I think they provide incredibly valuable advice and insights for us legislators, but we get our work started here in January, and I think that it's important to get this conversation started. This is a direction that I believe would be a positive direction to be moving, but we will still be in the process of having this conversation, and we can accommodate a discussion around whatever recommendations the Office of the Legislative Auditor recommends in the report as it becomes available.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Seeing that and understanding, we've talked about this for a couple years now, and we've had lots of discussions. We've seen that this has not taken the direction that we hoped it would, and certainly has the problems that we're trying to at least address. It seems to me that it would be wise for us to wait for that audit to make sure we've covered everything and we do it right from the beginning and not rush like we've had to in the past. And so I would move that we would lay this on the table until the legislative audit report comes out.
Madam Chair, I request a roll call.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Norrie, could you...
Madam Chair, I believe this is under Senate rules. This is a non-debatable motion.
Yes, Senator Thompson, I wanted to ask for a clarification on dates. No, don't want to debate, you know, the actual merit of the motion, but I'm just a little, I want to clarify the actual dates. So, Senator Lurie, if you could, do we have, remind me the date of the report needs to be issued by what date? Do we have, or the staff, if the staff of the auditor's report? Because there is a date, and I don't remember.
Madam Chair, I don't, and I do want to be respectful that this is not a debatable motion, but I don't think that there is an actual date set. It is expected sometime early in the second half of February. I do believe that the auditors, my understanding is they're, if not done, they're very close to done and have draft reports that they're circulating amongst the agencies that are reviewing and waiting comments. But I mean, they don't really fix a date, is my understanding, and so we're anticipating it.
If members, if you could wait, I think these dates are relevant, so I'm going to consult with the staff to make sure.
We don't have it. We have to look for it.
Okay. We just don't have... they're looking for the specific date to see if that report actually had it.
And Madam Chair?
Issued. Yes, Senator Hall.
My motion isn't to a specific date, though. It is to the date it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
Whenever that is, I think the information is needed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we're gonna ask the members to vote on that, and we have a request for a roll call. So, Ms. Staff, please, if you can proceed.
Torres Ray?
Yes.
You're moving it on?
No. Yes.
Senator Eaton?
No.
Hall?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Dahl?
No.
Hayden?
No.
Housley?
Yes.
Johnson?
No.
Pappas?
No.
Peterson? Scalzi?
No.
Thompson?
Yes.
Wicklund?
No.
There being five yes and seven no's, the motion is not adopted. Senator, I think these dates are incredibly important because I know the reason you asked us to have this hearing. I know you have several stops, so I want to make sure that members know. I think that the motion was an important motion because we're going to receive some information. My guess, I do not know what the report is going to say. Like multiple reports that we get, they are going to give us a lot of information about what is not working, and they typically don't give us a lot of feedback as to what do we put in legislation to make it work. So I think Senator Lurie has put some information before us to make this system work. So I suppose that it is our obligation to review that and figure out whether or not we agree or disagree with that direction. So I appreciate the merits of the motion to wait for a report. I think we will receive the report, and my hope, Senator Lurie, is that you build on that report because that's what those reports are, and I think you just said that you take that seriously, and we hope that information, as it becomes available, you will help us understand how those recommendations become part of the direction that you take. Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would simply point out that Senator Lurie himself conceded that many things were rushed. And I think he's admitted himself and the people around this table in this room acknowledge the shortcomings of MNsure, not only from an IT perspective, but from a policy perspective. My understanding is that there's already been a request for general fund money to support this thing, even though it was supposed to be self-supporting on a tax rate that was going to move between a high and a low, ended up set at the high. We're weeks from the first committee deadline.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's end of March. What could be more relevant than having a firm understanding of where we are at with MNsure financially, which presumably is what the OLA report is going to give us? And I'm simply pointing out that, you know, this is one of those things that was rammed through on a completely partisan basis in a hurry. We're now back here because that process didn't work, and we're about to do it again.
Yes, Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to remind the committee that the reason we had to ram it through is because it wasn't dealt with for the previous 2 years by the controlling party. And if there is an expert on MNsure, it is Senator Lori. This nobody has lived and breathed it more in the last couple years than he has. And I'm much more comfortable taking his information than saying that I need to make my decisions based on the auditor. I think that Tony is much more knowledgeable than the auditor, no matter how much they investigate. I think that information will be helpful, but I don't think it'll change a whole lot of stuff.
Thank you. Senator Hayden.
Good. Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to make the same point as Senator Eaton that I sat for 2 years in the Health and Human Service Committee without any action on any exchange bill, no matter who was bringing it forward. So the reason for what Senator Thompson describes or characterizes as rushed or rammed was really just to try to meet deadlines that have been imposed a couple of years before. And so any lack of thoughtful conversation was due to us not being able to take up the bill choosing to take up the bill. I would also say that the legislative auditor's information will be relevant throughout this process, but I think we should start now. We have a lot of work that we have to do, and time is of the essence, and I think we should start this process now. It has to more than likely travel through a healthcare policy, a healthcare finance, if it makes it. It'll probably have to go through finance. I don't know if there's other stops, potentially commerce. I don't know, but there is going to be in the floor, and the same thing would have to happen in the House if they so choose to pick it up. So there's going to be ample time for members that are concerned in a bipartisan way to have an opportunity to weigh in on all aspects of this bill. So, Madam Chair, and with all due respect to Senator Thompson's comments, I think it would be apropos for us to start to debate the merits of Senator Lori's proposal to see if it's something that this committee would like to move forward to the next committee.
Thank you. Thank you, members. So we have four people who are here to testify and provide some feedback and guidance. Mr. Ron Elwood is here, and we would like to invite him to approach the table. We also have Ms. Sarah Greenfield. If she could please approach the table. We will begin with your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. Members, no one is more frustrated with the MNsure enrollment issues than Legal Aid is. We work every day with clients who are, in fact, eligible for and who do, in fact, depend on medical assistance and Minnesota care. These programs are vitally important in providing needed health care services and critical for saving on health care costs. Without these programs, our clients would only have access to more expensive emergency care. We are indeed frustrated with the ongoing problems our clients have had and continue to have enrolling in these vital programs. But we believe that determining eligibility for our clients in these programs, for medical assistance, Minnesota care, and tax credit programs, is a state function. No one could argue that this current system should not change. Nobody debates that. But it is evident that under the current structure with the board, that board has little understanding of, has placed lesser importance on, and has paid insufficient attention to the critically important groups of Minnesotans that our clients comprise. So will converting MNsure to a state agency make it perfect, solve all the problems? Of course not. But we believe, under the circumstances, it is the better choice. It is undoubtedly more accountable, and we urge the committee's support for Senate File 139. And in closing, I also want to just say that we support and are grateful for the increase in Navigator funding that's contained in the bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Greenfield, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sarah Greenfield. I'm the healthcare program manager at Take Action Minnesota. Take Action is a statewide network of grassroots organizations and individual members that work together on issues of social, racial, and economic justice. And on healthcare reform, we have worked for many years to engage regular folks in both policy change, including passage of a state-based exchange bill several years ago, and since that time in implementation of that bill and assisting folks in finding enrollment assistance. We are strongly in favor of this bill, both the aspect to change Minsure into a public agency and to address the payment for navigators. In addition to the factors that Ron named, as consumer advocates or advocates for people, we strongly believe in public oversight over public dollars. The governor's budget projects 91% of Minsure enrollees to be into public programs. We have the pleasure of being with people many times when they figure out what they may qualify for or hearing their stories after they enroll, and we know that this is a good thing. Combined with many Minnesotans benefiting from the tax credits, there are a lot of public dollars flowing through Minsure, and it makes sense that they be governed in a public agency. We also see that public perception of Minsure is that it is a public entity. When people do have difficulty resolving challenges with their enrollment process, in addition to reaching out over and over again to their navigators and enrollment assisters, they also have reached out to their legislators, and both for assistance and for accountability for the challenges that they're facing. We think that accessibility and accountability to the public would only be improved with Minsure as a public agency. But in particular, I wanted to highlight the less talked about aspect of the bill, and that is the piece addressing navigator compensation. We are not a navigator, but we do refer people to them and work with them closely, and we see the incredibly difficult work that they do. Some of that has been increased by Minsure's challenges, but some of it is just inherently difficult work. There are verifications to be had into public programs. There is the work to assist people in figuring out their eligibility into private. As a quirk of the fast timeline in which Minsure was created, navigators were established in reference to our old Minka program. There is a sort of holdover that I don't think we or most legislators certainly anticipated, that that would create a payment discrepancy between $25, which they get if somebody turns out to be eligible for Medicaid, and $70 that they are able to get now if the person is eligible for Minnesota Care or QHPs. I don't believe that either of those dollar figures are sufficient for the level of work that navigators do. On average, they're finding 3 hours for a public program and enrollment, and that is sort of balancing out the people who they say see six times over many months and the people who luckily get through on the first shot in a very short visit. I think some folks would project that the time averages out even higher than that. So certainly 70 may not be enough, but 25 certainly isn't, and there isn't really a logic for the reason that those figures should be different. A huge benefit of Minsure is the fact that there's one non-segregated place that people can go before they know what they're eligible for, and navigators are an extension of that, and we'd like to see the payment for them reflect that.
Thank you. Members, do you have any questions for these testifiers? Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, I have Mr. Philip Cryan and Ms. Catherine Comet. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, my name is Philip Cryan. I'm the director of the home care sector of SEIU Healthcare Minnesota, a local union representing more than 43,000 healthcare and home care workers throughout the state. I'm also here today as a former member of the governor's task force that was appointed in the fall of 2011 to advise his administration on the policy design of the state's new health insurance exchange. Prior to my work with SEIU, a white paper that I wrote for the Economic Policy Institute in Washington back in 2009, modeling the economic effects of key provisions of the proposed health care law, was cited several times by members of Congress during the floor debate over the ACA. So it's a topic that's very familiar. The bill that's brought before your committee today is an excellent one. It deserves the support of all members of this committee who seek to hold public institutions accountable to the voters, taxpayers, and citizens of our state. In all the ink that's been spilled over the last year and a half around MnSure's rollout, and all the very real challenges that people have faced with this new system, and all the progress in addressing those challenges, what often gets obscured, I think, is the extraordinary strength as a piece of public policy of the exchange law that this legislature passed in 2013. The implementation of that law has been full of frustration, but the law itself is very strong. If you compare it with its peers around the country, it's one of the strongest pieces of exchange and overall ACA implementation legislation in the country. I'm very grateful for the leadership shown by our state's legislators in bringing this law into being and all of the affordable quality coverage it's made available to Minnesotans that was not available before. And I'm proud of the small role that the governor's task force played in preparing the ground for that law. But there's one significant exception to that story of the success of the Minnesota exchange law. MnSure is not directly accountable to the voters, taxpayers, and citizens of our state. A new piece of public infrastructure like MnSure needs to be subjected to the same kind of scrutiny and accountability that are characteristic of public institutions in a democracy. The people responsible for running it need to know that they, or someone that they directly report to, answer to the voters. On the governor's task force, we were able to reach consensus on most of the policy recommendations we made to this legislature. But the question of whether the new state exchange should be fully public or instead run by a private board was not one that our 15 members could come to agreement on. I made a proposal to the task force that was almost identical to the bill that's now before this committee, a proposal that a major new public entity conducting eligibility determinations for public programs and processing tax credits needs to be directly accountable to voters, and therefore it needs leadership over whom elected officials have direct authority. Other members of the task force felt strongly that the new exchange needed a private board. Some seem to assume that the only problem with public institutions is that they do not have private sector people running them, and to overlook the ways in which elected and appointed leaders in a democratic state can be held directly accountable by voters. It became clear over the course of the task force's deliberations that the majority of members of the task force wanted a private board for MnSure, and we compromised. It was a mistake. By far, the best functioning and highest enrollment parts of ACA implementation in Minnesota so far are the public program expansion components of it. That is no accident. I hope the members of this committee will choose to make MnSure, like other public programs, directly accountable to the voters, taxpayers, and citizens that it exists to serve. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Gomit, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Catherine Commit, and I represent the Minnesota Council of Health Plans, which is the trade association that represents Minnesota's 7 nonprofit health plans. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comments today on Senate File 139, which changes the governance structure for MnSure. After reviewing this bill, the Council continues to believe the public-private partnership model serves Minnesotans best. That said, we also believe changes are needed to make MnSure work better. Like Senator Lori, we continue to be concerned with the current board structure and composition and the limited relevant experience and expertise. The Council would prefer a public-private partnership model rather than replacing the board with a State Department model. Let me provide some context for our position. After the Affordable Care Act was passed into law, the federal regulations to implement it required the exchange to, and I quote, have demonstrated experience in the individual and small group health insurance markets and in benefits coverage, unquote. By way of background, in 2001, the Health Insurance Exchange Advisory Task Force was created to help design and develop a health insurance exchange for Minnesota. The task force was made up of 15 different stakeholders, including one health plan representative, to advise the state on what a state-based exchange should include. In January 2012, the Health Insurance Exchange Advisory Task Force issued their final recommendations, such as the exchange should have a board of directors and it should be made up of 15 to 20 members. a majority of the members should represent the interests of consumers and small businesses. A majority of the members should have relevant experience in health benefits administration, healthcare finance, health plan purchasing, the healthcare delivery system and practitioners, public health, health disparities, or health policy issues related to the small group and individual markets and the uninsured. The governance structure should have a rigorous conflicts of interest policy with the goal of a fair and open marketplace. Members of the board with potential conflicts of interest should at most represent a small minority of the board of directors. So despite these recommendations, board members did not have the background in the individual and small group health insurance markets and in benefits coverage that was needed to oversee the development of MNsure. We agree with Senator Lori that there needs to be more oversight of MNsure by the board as well as the legislature and the Dayton administration. As we stated back in 2013 when we testified, we continue to believe today that the governance model used for nearly 40 years by the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association, or MCHA, has worked very well and is the model that ought to be used for MNsure. MCHA is a successful public-private partnership that has board members with expertise on health insurance matters, and at the same time, the board is closely overseen by the Minnesota Department of Commerce. We support a public-private partnership model with a board of directors who know and understand all of the elements of how the health insurance system works. Without the relevant experience and expertise, the MNsure board is limited in its ability to ask complex and technical questions in order to make fully informed decisions. The MCHA framework is a successful model that ought to be replicated and would allow the board to better guide the operation of MNsure. We appreciate the opportunity to work with Senator Lori and will continue to do so as this bill moves through the legislative process. And I also just want to say thank you for the amendment that you put on. We appreciate that. We think that having quarterly meetings will make them, for these advisory committees, will make them more meaningful than they currently are. And we want to acknowledge that Senator Lori has heard some of the concerns we've voiced to him. So thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Ms. Kamade.
Senator Lori. Might I just, is that right, to reply to some of the testimony and whatnot?
Senator Lori, if you don't mind, let the members take the questions and
sure.
Maybe you can, because they're going to ask questions that are related to that testimony, so you can build into both. Senator Thompson and then Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. I find it interesting. Ms. Greenfield indicated that about 91% of the people involved in the exchange are involved in public programs. And I didn't write down an exact quote, but I believe, Mr. Cryan, you essentially said you consider the movement into publicly subsidized programs as probably the largest success of the exchange. That is exactly the opposite of what was sold. And in fact, the people who sold the Affordable Care Act at the federal level and the exchange at the state level agree that if in fact we have a disproportionately high percentage of that, it is a financial house of cards that will fall. So has the goal changed here? Or is this now just another way of administering public programs, or do we still view this as a marketplace? Because it seems to me, you just said a few minutes ago, the big success of this is what it's doing with the expansion of public programs, which most of us that were opposed to this said on the Senate floor, and we were assured that was not the case. And now that's where the bragging rights come from. Amazing to me.
If you could respond, you know, again, this conversation will take place again in your committee, Senator Lori, but, you know, with respecting the members' decision to get into some of this detail, we will allow some of these questions. Please.
Very briefly then, Madam Chair and Senator Thompson, my point in saying that was simply to acknowledge what I think everyone would agree to be true, that the challenges of implementation have been almost entirely associated with the rollout of subsidized QHP or private health insurance coverage through the exchange, and that we have not seen a similar set of policy implementation challenges with the Medicaid or medical assistance expansion and Minnesota Care or basic health plan expansion through the ACA. Was not to say anything about the intent of the law having been for those programs to be successful while the QHP program was unsuccessful. I think that we all share a frustration with those challenges and would like to see them better. It was simply a point about the public accountability of those programs seems to have been at least associated with better policy implementation.
Thank you. Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Cryan, you're with SEIU. How will this change the public unions? Is that, I mean, your involvement, does this change the structure or the numbers or any of that?
Mr. Cryan.
Madam Chair and Senator Hall, our union is a union of private sector, hospital, nursing home, and clinic workers, and of self-directed home care workers in the state's self-directed home care program. So there's no direct effect on any of our membership.
Thank you, Mr. Gray. Senator Lurie, if you could expand on some of the issues that have been brought to our attention.
Madam Chair, a couple of points in reference to the comments of Mr. Cryan and the questions of Senator Thompson. I mean, I think that, you know, I don't believe it was missold. I think that we hit our target for public program enrollees. Before implementation of the Affordable Care Act, I think 60% is the number of our uninsured were eligible for public programs, and we struggled to do the outreach that was necessary to reach these difficult to reach populations and bring them into the fold to what they've been eligible for a very long time. And through carefully crafting and preserving the well-regarded Minnesota Care, which occurred after the passage of the exchange itself and had to be, you know, we left it agnostic, the exchange itself, as to whether we would preserve Minnesota Care or not. But we hit the mark on public program enrollment. And it was what was sold. We have, because of the technology challenges and, quite frankly, the low premiums, it has been there has been some diversion from QHP market over into the private marketplace. The MinSure has been difficult for consumers and assisters to navigate. That we're not trying to sugarcoat that. That's a very real concern. But the public program enrollment is something that has helped us a great deal. In the first year of rollout, we reduced the rolls of the uninsured in Minnesota by over 40%. That is historic in its very nature, and it is, again, a very difficult population to reach, and we did it successfully, and it is largely a story of successful public program outreach and speaks to the backbone of the policy framework that we laid in place here. To some of the issues regarding the board and whatnot, I'm really trying to be careful not to make this about personalities. Our current board actually does have a wealth of experience in insurance of different types and regulation and is a very knowledgeable board and has put forth many valiant efforts. I think that it's really about the accountability. Say what we will about the electoral process that we use to make decisions in Minnesota and in every state around the country. We have our struggles, we have our battles, we rattle our sabers, we have our arguments, and we pass a law. At the end of the day, we're accountable for the laws that we pass and the oversight of the taxpayer money that we collect and spend on behalf of people and taxpayers, consumers, and industry. And when we created this board and insulated it from that direct line of accountability to the to the citizens, and things got tough, which they were. I mean, it was a very difficult rollout, the difficult process. I think that human nature, the nature of an entity, is to exercise that insulation to the greatest extent possible, and we didn't get that accountability. And it was a frustration shared by Republicans and Democrats. I mean, this is, and by industry and by advocacy groups and by individual voters and citizens that contacted us, asking us to be accountable to them and hold Minture accountable, and we struggled with that. I mean, I think that's kind of at the core of what I'm proposing here, is to really fix that direct line of authority so that all of this function, this core public function, determining eligibility for our public programs, determining eligibility for and the amount of tax credits that will flow through the federal government. These are core public functions, and I think that it's critical that we restore the lines of accountability and authority that that were not present in the bill as we passed it 2 years ago.
Senator Lori, I have a few members, and I'll take your questions in a minute. I have put together an amendment that I wanted to offer that goes back to kind of the jurisdiction of this particular committee. And I really have to say that you have opened an opportunity for me to talk about kind of a process question that is very relevant to this committee. When we do appointments and we create new organizations, there is a tendency and a history here that we say what these institutions do, but we do not require qualifications for the people who head these organizations. And I have a problem with that. When Senator Ann Rest headed this committee, she had a conversation about task forces and advisory committees, and she created some guidance as to what these task forces should have, you know, dates, limits, all kinds of things. I am going to do the same for the purposes of appointing people. In your bill, there is no language on the requirement of the expertise that the commissioner should have. And I have a problem with that. I have attempted to put together some language to put some guidance as to what are the requirements for the expertise. And the reason you gave me that opportunity is because this is a very unique system that you have been working with. So it just, it's as a person that really has this unique opportunity and needs this expertise on private public sector type thing. So I want to work on this amendment, but I want you to know that this is very important to this committee, that we should have some very specific guidance as to what is that we believe this person should bring, what kind of expertise, what kind of preparation. So I would like to work with you and would like to have an open door in your committee to bring this amendment back, because I have been advised that we have some technical issues that this particular amendment is not addressing. So we work very quickly, and to your I appreciate that you were open to hear this today, but it was very quickly. I just talked to you about half an hour ago, so I know that you are interested in this, and I appreciate your openness to work on this, but we are not ready because there are some technical pieces that I need to address, and I need some guidance from the staff. But I wanted members to know that that's an issue that I care very deeply about, and from now on, I would like this committee to have input into the process of defining what are the requirements and the expertise that we believe is necessary for hiring or appointing these individuals. So I'm going to go in order. I think Senator Anderson was first, and then Senator Hall, and then Senator Thompson. So Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Lori, you know, creating another department, we already have the Department of Health in place, and I'm just wondering why we couldn't incorporate Minsure into the Department of Health. Or if you want to go to insurance, you want to go to another department and go there. Why couldn't we just incorporate them instead of building a brand new bureaucracy of Minsure?
Senator Lori.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, It's an interesting point. I thought about it a little bit. I mean, there's DHS, there's Commerce, the Department of Human Services, there's the Department of Commerce, there's the Department of Health, there's the Department of Management and Budget, Minute. There's all of these entities that touch what a health insurance exchange is. And none of them are a perfect fit. And I think that the idea of keeping it in the manner that it is right now. So right now, it would take existing MNsure structure and just create different lines of accountability to continue to operate and hopefully make decisions in a better way under that direction of an administration and under the guidance of a legislature, but trying to fit it solely within one of our existing agencies didn't quite work because it's a big part public programs, it's a part insurance regulator, you know, overseer, it's part network adequacy under Department of Health, it's part technology under Minute. It just wasn't a perfect fit under any of our agencies. I think that it would best serve Minnesota residents and consumers as its own standalone. And it does not increase government or bureaucracy. These are, you know, essentially public employees over at MNsure today, just answerable to a board instead of a commissioner. And so it doesn't increase bureaucracy. It doesn't increase public employment or employees. But I think it does make most sense in its own agency to ensure compliance across the board with the federal ACA that we are required to comply with.
Follow up, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Roy, we already have in some of our agencies issues like MSHA and other areas that don't fall necessarily under the guidelines of what it is. So I don't know what difference it would make. As long as it has some dealings with health or with commerce or with that, as long as it fits there, it would have the ability to massage itself into the existing department that we have. I think. I don't see why we have to create a brand new one. I guess I would oppose it.
Thank you. Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Lowry, what's your vision for funding this? Will MNsure be requesting more money? And since the Department of Health is kind of duplicating, will this save money?
Senator Lowry.
Madam Chair, Senator Hall, the Department of Human Service, I think you're referencing. I haven't changed the financing structure other than to take the 3.5% withhold that exists today that's collected at the discretion of the board and brought into a revenue account that automatically flows to their operations. I added the I'm proposing that we add the oversight of the legislature to actually appropriate the money that goes into that, so it would create a new special revenue account, and that 3.5% withhold would go into that special revenue account to be appropriated by the legislature. It would still also have the allocation from the Department of Human Services, probably similar to what the governor proposed. We'll have to have that debate and appropriate that as well. It's been talked about quite a bit in the governor's budget bill with the change in percentage of enrollees between public programs and QHPs. The administrative allocation for the part that's attributable to public program enrollees grew, and it is a request in the governor's budget of additional monies from the Department of Human Services. We would have to undergo that same conversation, and it would take some administrative allocation from DHS as well to fund this.
Thank you. Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I first wanted to comment on your amendment. I don't have the understanding of the bill itself, let alone the implications of your amendment to say I would vote for it today. But I certainly like the idea that you are trying to bring some people to the table with expertise.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, that is something
that many of us were begging for when this was set up, and it was specifically at the request of the proponents structured in such a way that we didn't want insurance people involved in running an insurance program, which is akin to finding, I suppose this is an appropriate analogy, 3 days after the Super Bowl, it's like saying we're going to set up a clinic where we get instructors on teaching young quarterbacks and say Tom Brady and Russell Wilson need not apply. I have no idea why we did that, but we did. So thank you. I think that that's absolutely important. And then I want to piggyback a little on Senator Hall's question about funding. If there isn't a sufficient percentage of you know, QHP kind of enrollees, if we continue to see the percentage of public program enrollees that we're seeing, the financial model fails. Where does the money come from then?
Madam Chair, Senator Thompson, the governor has proposed a balanced budget composed of the 3.5% and an administrative allocation attributed to public program enrollees from DHS. I mean, that's a balanced budget. That's the proposal from the governor, and we'd have to go through that and craft, you know, our own legislative one. I mean, and that's the work ahead of us.
Senator Thompson.
But the point is, if it is not self-sustaining because of the insufficient number of private enrollees, we will end up hitting the taxpayer for it. Am I correct?
Senator Lurie.
Senator Thompson, Madam Chair, that is an issue that we will address by May of this year. I mean, open enrollment, one of the things I had intended to say at the outset, open enrollment's still going on for another 11 days. I think that we'll know a lot more once open enrollment closes, whether they meet their target of QHPs for this year. But at this point, to the best of anyone's knowledge, there is a balanced budget proposed by the governor, and we will also work to balance the budget. I think we have a pretty good idea of the financial structure and the moving parts that are in front of us. And we'll have to make adjustments and make our decisions at the legislature, as I think should be done each year, including in regards to the 3.5%.
Thank you. Thank you, members. I think this was an important discussion. And, you know, I've always said, Senator Lurie, I think Senator Lurie is aware that I have a great deal of interest in my own district in both, you know, areas, and some of the questions that Senator Thompson asked today were questions that my constituents have asked. Many of the issues that you're addressing are issues that they really wanted to address, and they are very appreciative of the direction, and they have questions. So a lot more to come. I know you will be asked to respond to many questions that are related to this. Members, do you have any other questions or any other issues that you wish to address or ask Senator Lurie or ask any of the testifiers?
Senator Eaton. Where is its next stop?
It has several stops, and I understand that it's going to Health and Human Services first, and then it will go to Commerce after that. And then it might come back to, so it goes to Health and Human Services Policy, then it goes to Health and Human Services, to Commerce, then to Health and Human Services Finance, and then Finance again. So it has multiple stops, but there are policy and finance stops, so that you will have multiple opportunities to do this. Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a brief procedural question. It was pretty obvious at the outset you would tried to restrict the debate here, and clearly the people on this committee, myself included, do not have the expertise to ask in-depth questions on the merits that you would see in members that are schooled in the Health and Human Services Committee. So my question would be for Senator Lurie, even though this is the committee of original jurisdiction, do you plan to allow a full hearing in the Health and Human Services Committee, or will that discussion now be restricted because it's not the committee of original jurisdiction? So in other words, it's not going to get a full hearing anywhere.
Perhaps that question is for me.
No, I'm asking the chair of the Health and Human Services Committee how he's going to handle it.
Let me respond first, Senator. My hope is that you didn't feel restricted today. I think that you know, if you wish to continue, we have 20 more minutes. You are welcome to ask. I believe the chair has responded to all of your questions. I do want to respect the jurisdiction of this committee, and I want to respect your time. I mean, we can dive into health and human services policy, which is not in the jurisdiction of this committee, but clearly you're entitled to ask those questions. You will also have the floor. I hope that you didn't feel restricted and that you had ample opportunity to ask the question. I think Senator Lurie is willing to answer the questions that you wish to ask. So, Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, there's two components to this. Number one, I did get the sense from your lead, maybe I misperceived, that you had hoped to limit the discussion. But I think more importantly, for those of us who are not on health and human services, this is one of the most complex areas of law that we have in the state. And so my point is those members that eat, live, and breathe that stuff and have far more expertise in it than I do should have the opportunity to ask these questions. So I want to be assured by Senator Lurie that that conversation is going to happen in the Health and Human Services Committee, because those members deserve a wide-ranging discussion and to have it treated as the Committee of Original Jurisdiction, because they're the folks that really understand this far more than myself or other members who don't serve on Health and Human Services.
I think that's fair. Senator Lurie.
Madam Chair and Senator Thompson, I think you're right. Actually, and I mean, my understanding of the Senate rules, and I might be wrong, but this is the way I've run my committee. I don't believe there's a germaneness rule in any of our committees. It doesn't really refer back to the Committee of Original Jurisdiction. I think that chairs try to, you know, encourage a committee to respect jurisdictional boundaries, but I do plan on having a very wide-ranging conversation. Amendments are proper in any committee. Outside the jurisdiction, I mean, we are limited by time constraints at times, and I think it tries to get to a more efficient process. But I am more than willing to sit on with the offline as well and go in depth and spend a great deal of time. I'm more than happy to spend as much time as we have on the microphone. I'm not trying to circumvent any of the public process. I do think that it's incredibly important. I think that this issue is one that is of great interest to people and makes a difference in people's lives. And I take it seriously and plan on having a robust debate through our committee process.
A quick.
Yep, Madam Chair and Senator Lurie, thank you. I appreciate that.
You're very welcome, Senator Thompson.
Senator Hall, and I know that Ms. Cummitt is really trying to call my attention. I'll get to you, Senator Hall.
Madam Chair, Senator Lurie. Question: when did you see that Minsure was failing, and moving this to a state agency, was that just decided lately, or was that always the plan?
Senator Lurie.
Senator Hall, I don't think that I would characterize it as Minsure is failing. I think that a new organizational structure, a new governance structure, could help in ensuring that decisions are made in an open, transparent manner that encompasses, stakeholders and citizens and taxpayers, and serves them better. I've been watching for the entire 18 months, trying to listen to the concerns brought forward by colleagues, be they Democrat, be they Republican, by industry, by stakeholders, by navigators, by brokers, by agents, by citizens. And honestly, it's not lightly that I take this decision to say, I think we got this governance piece wrong, and that we would be better served to bring this core public function under our existing public structures that we trust really important functions to. I mean, we have, disease outbreak, water safety, public safety, and the highway department. These are all core public functions, and we trust them to our agencies. There are, it is not a perfect solution, but we don't have a better solution. There is at least a clear line of accountability and authority and a decision-making structure that we're able to hold individuals accountable. And I think that's incredibly important.
Thank you, Senator. Ms. Cummitt, I believe you have a comment that you wanted to share.
Madam Chair, thank you for indulging me. I just would be remiss if I didn't respond and clarify a statement that Mr. Cryan made in his testimony. He suggested that one of the reasons for the difficulties and challenges that the Minsure operations have experienced is due to the QHP policies. And in fact, that is not correct. The health plans have been working very closely with both the Department of Human Services as well as with the Minsure staff very, very regularly, because our goal is to make sure that people get the coverage that they are attempting to sign up for. There are just, the fact of the matter is, there are simply operational challenges and IT challenges that have not yet been resolved. But it's not solely on the qualified health plan side, on the commercial side. It is both sides. And so much of this work that's being done today is being done on a manual basis. And by that, I mean people are literally looking at Excel files, trying to eyeball where the mistakes are so that they can correct them and make sure that the correct information gets input. We have a ways to go before these issues get resolved, but this is something we have been committed to working with Minsure and DHS to resolve. So I just want to be sure that the committee does not leave with the impression that this is somehow the fault of the commercial health plans. Thank you.
I so appreciate that clarification, because I believe that I have heard what you just stated, that there has been a tremendous effort to really do this collaboration, but there has been a lot of technical difficulties as well as, you know, the complexity of really bringing this new system in place. It's just not a simple task, so it will take time. So thank you for that. We have one more question from Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Lowry, will the Minsure now hire more individuals at the department under this new plan, or will the staffing level and budget stay the same?
Senator Lowry.
Madam Chair, Senator Hall, this bill doesn't call for any new hiring of staff. Any new hiring of staff would have to be run through our committee jurisdictions and make a request of the legislature to add FTEs, just the same as every other state department does. Right now, when they're divorced, actually they can grow staff to the extent they want to without our oversight. I mean, this is part of what we do as a legislature, as we monitor things like that. If you go through the governor's budget, every single FTE that the governor is proposing that we add to departments comes through us for approval. And for Minsure, that has not been the case. So this bill does not propose any cutbacks in employees. It does not propose any expansion of employees, but it does require that whatever employees are there be funded and run through the legislative process the same as other departments. I think it's a very critical role that we play in a very good question.
Thank you, Senator Lowry. Any other questions? If not, I need a motion. Senator Dahl?
Madam Chair, just wanted to say just want to say I'm real supportive of your efforts, Senator Lowry, and I'm supporting the bill. And I know ever since I've known you up here at the Capitol, and especially on this particular issue, you always have an open door. You are wanting to get things right. There's no hidden agenda. I think ultimately the words that I've heard today is more people are getting insured, more people are getting the help they need, and that's what I hear out there. So I want to commend you on your efforts today and in the past and going forward, and I trust that we'll have a great product once we're finished. And I'll move the bill as amended.
Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, I'd like a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. So, staff, please.
Torres Ray?
Yes.
Eaton?
Yes.
Hall?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Dahl?
Yes.
Hayden?
Yes.
Housley?
No.
Johnson?
Yes.
Pappas?
Yes.
Peterson? Scalzi?
Yes.
Thompson?
No.
Wicklund?
Yes.
We have 8 yeses and 4 noes. So Senator Dahl moves that Senate file 139 be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to Health and Human Services. All of those in favor signify by saying aye. Wait. Oh, already. Sorry.
I thought we just voted on that.
You just voted on that. I apologize.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Bill passes. Thank you, Senator Lurie. Members, that's all we have for today. Senator Hall.
Madam Chair, thank you. In the remark that Senator Eaton talked about, she would rather hear from Senator Lurie than our legislative audit. That concerns me, and I would like to state on the record, even though that Senator Lurie is well-versed in this issue, that we appreciate, most of us anyway, appreciate and trust and respect the legislative audit.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and I think Senator Eaton may want to respond.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd just like to say for the record that I no way meant to disrespect the office of the legislative auditor. I respect their work very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Senators. Yes, Senator Hayden.
I just want to ask Senator Hall who Senator Lurie is.
Oh. Lurie.
Yeah.
So many times you're going to ask me about who's this senator with my accent who do never say the names correctly. But thank you, senators, and we probably will hear about the auditor. He was here, but we will continue this conversation, and we will adjourn for today. Thank you.